Jake Knapp was a nightclub bouncer. Now he's competing in the Masters. We'll hear from him later in the show. Plus, the WNBA is getting ready for what might be the most anticipated draft in its history, and we have shocking new details in the betting scandal around Shohei Ohtani's translator. It's Friday, April 12th. I'm Owen Poindexter, and this is Front Office Sports Today. The WNBA draft is on Monday at a time of major potential growth for the league. Joining me now to discuss is Front Office Sports breaking news reporter Margaret Fleming. Welcome, Margaret.
Thanks, Owen.
So this draft will bring in a lot of talent into the league. Caitlin Clark, obviously, first and foremost, but plenty behind her. It's a good problem to have, but in some ways it is a problem for the WNBA.
Yeah, absolutely. The WNBA has only 12 teams with 12 spots on the roster. And there's so much talent in women's college basketball, as people are seeing, especially this year, that not all the players who want to play professionally in the WNBA even get a chance to. If we think back to last year in last draft, the three highest scorers for LSU in that title game all were waived from WNBA rosters. They all got drafted and they all got waived. One of them even was invited as one of the only 15 players to come to the draft in person, and she did not make a roster spot. And the same thing, Caitlin Clark's kind of right-hand woman, Monica Sinano, had the same thing. She was waived. And so it's tough because, of course, this happens in lots of sports where you get drafted and then you get waived. But the WNBA, it's really squeezed, and they aren't adding an expansion team until next season. And so the number of players is staying as it is for right now. And so it's going to be really hard for those Caitlin Clarks, Cameron Brinks, Angel Reese's, the names that we hear of so often. I think it was about 15 to 17 or 18 in the last few years. That's been the number that have actually stuck around and made the roster of a team that they've been drafted toward. So it's about like half of the women who are drafted don't actually end up making the roster spot and have to pursue. I mean, a lot of WNBA players pursue other, like European leagues or leagues elsewhere in the world. But if they want to continue playing basketball, they have to go somewhere else. And so it's incredibly difficult for these women who want to keep playing professionally to have somewhere to go.
It feels like there's room for more as long as the money's there.
Yeah, injuries are a really good thing to bring up as well. I mean, there's several different players with knee injuries right now. Elizabeth Kitley from Virginia Tech and Mackenzie Holmes from Indiana are two great examples of players that sustained injuries during their college season, but because of the WNBA season being in the summer, they're out for the whole WNBA season before even getting a chance to be drafted. And so if you're a team, they're both really good talents. I mean, they could be in maybe like the second or third round. I think they're projected right now. But it's like, is it worth it for a team that only has so many spots to keep someone else around that won't be able to play this season? What happens for those, athletes? Do they kind of just wait around a year and then hope to go in the next year's draft? I mean, then again, you're going to have the same problem. I guess there'll be an expansion team, but still, it's going to be going up against players like Paige Becker. So it's not like it gets really any easier.
We also just found out the WNBA partnered with Opill, which is a birth control pill. And they're going to have a sort of traditional sponsorship deal on top of some educational stuff that they're doing around the league. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this, pretty unique deal they have.
I think it fits really well into what the WNBA has been doing, and it's kind of a really good time, I think, as well for them to, highlight what they've been doing. I mean, the W has, for so many years, really, both the league and the players have really pushed social justice efforts forever. I mean, long before, like Free Britney Griner, long before, any of the kind of like social unrest in 2020, the WNBA have really championed social justice efforts. And so I think it's really smart for them at this exact moment of so many more eyeballs are coming into our league right now because Caitlin Clark is coming into our league right now. And so many more people are caring about women's basketball than ever have before. I think it's really smart for them to say, hey, this is what we're about. This is what we're about. Just reminding everyone, this is important to us. So they have a couple like missions every year, and reproductive rights was one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Margaret Fleming, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Ipe Mizuhara, the former translator of Shohei Ohtani, has been charged with stealing over $16 million from Ohtani. He did this in part by pretending that he was Ohtani to bank employees so that he could initiate large transfers from Ohtani's account to an illegal sports bookie. The investigation has produced some jaw-dropping numbers, including that Mizuhara had $183 million in losing bets, $142 million in winning bets, and a total loss of $40.7 million. Remarkably, even though he was willing to do all that, there is no evidence that he bet on baseball. He seems to have crossed just about every other ethical line, but apparently not that one. It's been clear enough from previous reports that the bookie assumed that Ohtani's money was behind these bets. Otherwise, why would he be floating millions of dollars to a translator with a middle-class salary? That appeared to be confirmed through text messages from March 20th, when the story was coming out. Mizuhara texted the bookie saying, "Have you seen the reports?" He responds, "Yes, but that's all bullshit. Obviously, you didn't steal from him. I understand it's a cover job. I totally get it." Ipe then responds, "Technically, I did steal from him. It's all over for me." This all came to light through a federal investigation of illegal bookies in California who collected money there and then laundered it through Las Vegas casinos. Had Mizuhara been operating through more legitimate platforms, he might never have been caught. NBC is cashing in on the Olympics. The network has sold $1.2 billion in ad inventory for the Summer Games, with over a quarter of that coming from new advertisers. 10 years ago, NBC and the International Olympic Committee linked up on a $7.65 billion deal that gave NBC broadcast rights for both the Summer and Winter Olympics from 2021 through 2032. NBC is trying to shake off a bad streak. The 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea, 2020 Summer Olympics in Japan, which the pandemic bumped to 2021, and the 2022 Beijing Olympics were all the least watched of all time, with average total audience figures of 19.8 million, 15.5 million, and 11.4 million. Beijing advertisers were given additional ad time to make up for the lack of viewers at the event they paid for. To try and reverse the slide, NBC is tapping big sports figures like Peyton Manning and Mike Tirico, as well as celebrities like Jimmy Fallon, Kelly Clarkson, and Snoop Dogg to be hosts during their coverage. And finally, O.J. Simpson passed away, succumbing to cancer at the age of 76. The trial of the Hall of Fame running back turned world-famous criminal defendant was perhaps the defining media event of the 90s and set trends in motion that are still playing out today. Up next, 2 years ago, Jake Knapp was a bouncer in a nightclub. In February, he won the Mexican Open and $1.5 million. Now he is competing in his first Masters, where he was two over par after the first round. My colleague David Rumsey caught up with him last week on his improbable journey, and that conversation is next.
All right, we are happy to be joined by Jake Knapp, a rookie on the PGA Tour who is getting ready to make his Masters debut thanks to his first tour win in February at the Mexico Open. Jake, thanks for being here. How's it going?
Everything's going great. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a whirlwind of the last month, but I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it definitely has for you for sure. So you turned professional, Jake, in 2016, but you really burst onto the scenes these past few months. A third place finish at the Farmers Insurance Open was followed up by your win in Mexico a few weeks later. That victory, as you know, not only got you into the Masters and the other majors, but also $20 million plus purse tournaments like the Arnold Palmer Invitational and Players Championship. What has that transition to kind of that next tier of the PGA Tour been like for you?
Yeah, it's been been busy, obviously. I mean, trying to navigate like the new schedule and all that. It's obviously good problems to have. It's different being able to select my schedule versus just kind of playing every single week because that's what I have to do. But yeah, I mean, it's a bit surreal, you know, playing in the events that you've obviously watched for so long on TV and being able to play these courses. And obviously, they're the best fields, best players. So I'm just happy to be a part of it.
And do you think playing for a little bit more money at some of those bigger purse events is impacting your game at all, or just how you prepare, how you practice, et cetera?
No, I've never been much of a money guy. I mean, I've struggled enough in my career to learn that that the money side of things, you know, it'll come when you play well. But it's all just kind of a bonus for me. I mean, I just enjoy, I enjoy the preparation. I enjoy just kind of the week in, week out grind and just kind of figuring out what you got that week and doing your best to game it and see if you can put yourself in position to win. But, you know, the money's a nice bonus for sure, but I enjoy the competition a lot more.
So let's talk a little bit of Masters, with this being your first trip professionally to Augusta National. What does a Masters rookie have to do to get prepared?
Watch a lot of previous Masters on film. You know, I mean, obviously I think it's, I'm not a big, I shouldn't say golf fan, but I don't watch a lot of golf. Usually, you know, I'll tune in if they're just somebody that I know personally, playing well or something on Sunday, but, I know I don't you know, make time for it or anything like that. But when it comes to the Masters, it's definitely one of those that I watch a heck of a lot more of. So, especially on the weekend, like that's when you're sitting on the couch from noon on and just enjoying the tournament. So I feel like I'm familiar with the course, as I'm sure most people are. But being there in person and being able to get some prep work in over the last couple of weeks and take my notes and get that all dialed in has been nice. So then, you know, when it comes to tournament time, I can just kind of play nine holes each day in practice and make sure my game's dialed. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of work, especially on a course like that where knowledge is everything and knowing where not to go and what slopes to use and not to use is very important. So doing my best to try to make up for all the lost time, basically.
Have you been to the Masters as a fan or played the course at all yourself yet?
I haven't. I mean, once I won, you get a certain number of visits before the tournament week starts. So I've used a couple of those, and I went the week after the Players, and I went this last week as well for a couple of days. And that's been great because, I mean, there's really not many people out there. If anything, there's just some other players and a few members. And, you know, obviously the course isn't crazy busy, and they kind of slow it down like the month or two prior leading up. But, yeah, being able to just kind of go around and hit a bunch of shots and also just play it, walk the ground, see it, get all that excitement kind of out of the way. So then, you know, hopefully I can show up that week and just feel game ready.
How quickly did you book your house or accommodations in Augusta after that win?
Yeah, I tried to book it as quick as I could. I feel like I got pretty lucky because I've heard what some of those houses go for that week. I mean, it makes sense for some of the guys. If you win the Masters, I feel like you just have to go and buy a house in Augusta that year, just because you're going to go back every year for the rest of your life. You might as well, you know, have your own place to go back to. But I got fortunate. I have a member at my home course who I think it's his aunt or something, usually rents her house out. And so, she was nice enough to rent it out for me for somewhat of a discounted price, but they still go for a decent amount. That's for sure.
Jake, obviously, you know, sponsorship deals are huge for professional golfers to fund a lot of travel, especially for folks like yourself before you get that big win. Have you been getting a lot of brands trying to work with you now since your rise to fame, so to speak?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I wouldn't say a lot necessarily. I mean, I think the benefit of playing well and winning is now you get the opportunity to be a little bit, like maybe a little bit more selective, trying to partner with brands that obviously fit my brand and fit me as a person. You know, I don't feel the need to jump on the first dollar sign I see or anything like that. I want to make sure it's a good relationship. You know, the sponsors that I've had, whether it's Coastal Clouds or the Anaheim Ducks, I've had for a long time, and they've stuck with me, you know, when I haven't had my best years. So relationships like that, you know, mean a lot to me. So, but yeah, I mean, there's been some that have definitely reached out and, you know, do my best to kind of sort through that with my guys and try to see which ones fit the best.
Yeah. And you talk about your brand, Jake, I can see a little bit of your hair there behind your hat. I think everybody loves the mullet. I don't know how long it is right now, but there's got to be a hair product brand out there that has your name.
I know.
On it, right?
Think Head and Shoulders or something like that would have reached out by now, but I think I just missed those marketing years for them. But you never know.
One more sponsorship thing I did want to ask you about. You have that unique deal with the Anaheim Ducks wearing that logo on your shirt. I know you're from California. You went to UCLA. What are your favorite teams for anybody else there that wants to put a logo on your shirt?
I'm a true SoCal kid. So I'm a Lakers fan, an Angels fan, and a Ducks fan. So never had a football team, just not having a team around us growing up, and the Chargers was too far away. And now obviously we have two teams in LA, but I feel like if I jump on one of those bandwagons, it's just not the same. So, I watch the NFL cause I enjoy it and play fantasy football, but yeah, I'm a big Lakers fan, big Ducks fan, and a big Angels fan as well.
Back to the Masters. I mean, we hit on a lot there, but besides just the competition of it all and getting to compete for a green jacket, what are you most excited for off the course about being there that week?
Off the course? That's a good question. I think honestly, probably being around all the past champions, and just getting to, you know, hopefully meet some of them and talk to some of them. And, you know, I got the opportunity to meet Jack at the Bears Club, after I won in Mexico. And that was pretty awesome. And I kind of jokingly just asked him like if he had any tips on how to get around Augusta, and he gave me a very serious answer and then was like, you know, I'd love to sit down and have lunch and we can discuss it more. So I'm planning on talking with him early in the week there. So I'm looking forward to that as well. But yeah, I think being around some of them, I mean, my brother played college golf with Sean O'Meara, who's Mark O'Meara's son. So hopefully get to see Mark and talk to him a little bit. But yeah, I think just being around them and just like the history of it all would be a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And when everybody gets to Augusta, there will obviously be that kind of merging of PGA Tour players and LIV players and this first time here in 2024. I'm just curious from your perspective at PGA Tour events, when you're on the range or in the clubhouse, what are those conversations between guys like right now when it's talking about the future of golf and investments and everything that could happen there?
Yeah, I feel like every week there's a conversation, or not even every week, every couple of days there's a conversation of something going on with Liv or some of the players or what, you know, they said or he said or whatever. And you know, to be honest, I don't pay it too much mind. Like, you know, golf's a business and I totally, you know, respect what all those guys did. But yeah, I feel like it's always kind of a topic of discussion and will continue to be until, you know, everybody kind of gets more answers on what the future has in store. But, you know, I wouldn't say I'm super close, but I'm friends with Bryson. We've known each other a super long time since he grew up in Northern California. I was in Southern California. So he was on the NorCal teams and I was on the SoCal team. So we crossed paths a lot and kept in touch. And then obviously while he was pursuing his speed and workout and all that stuff, we just kind of stayed in touch and chatted a decent amount, and I got to see him this last week. So, yeah, it'll be cool to see him and cross paths with him. And, you know, I can't really think of some of the other guys that I might know who are over there who will be in the Masters. But yeah, I mean, guys are always kind of talking about it. But, you know, for the guys that want to go over there, they'll go. And the guys that don't, they'll stay on tour.
Jake, this has been awesome, but we can't let you get out of here without – talking about your days as a nightclub bouncer. I know you've talked about this a lot. Everybody loves to talk about from bouncer at a nightclub to the winner on the PGA Tour. What was one of the craziest stories from your days working that job before winning on the PGA Tour?
You know, it's so funny. Like, I've been trying to think about like more crazy stories and whatnot, but I mean, I was pretty fortunate. The one crazy weekend we had where I guess a bunch of things went wrong, I actually happened to not be there and I was at a mini tour event. So fortunately, you know, nobody got hurt or anything like that, but just, you know, kind of a little brawl or whatever. But you know, for the most part, it was a pretty nice place and we didn't have to worry about too much for the most part. It was, you know, somebody who mouths off and drinks too much and you kick them out and make sure they stay out. And, But fortunately, you know, nothing too crazy. Had to drag a few people out here and there, but I was fortunate to stay out of the mess.
Did you ever notice any group of guys that looked like they might be coming from around a golf or on a golf trip or something like that coming in there? And you're like, I can spot a golfer.
Oh, for sure. I mean, because it is called the country club. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that come in, you know, trip with the boys or whatever, and they come in for some drinks. And then, you know, always the worst one is when, you know, members from my home course come in and they see me, and I kept it a secret for a really long time. And nobody knew I was working there for like 4 or 5 months until they found out. And then I even ran into one of my buddies who, caddies on the PGA Tour. He used to caddy on the Corn Ferry Tour. And he came in and I was at the front door and he's like, what are you doing here? I was like, just working, man. Don't mind me. So, I think some of that stuff though, that was also like the, you know, I don't want to be here anymore, or have to be here anymore. And, you know, I probably could have pursued some more sponsorships and things like that, but I like the idea of getting it done myself. And, you know, it was a different time in my life, but I'm glad that I did it. And I feel like I learned a lot from it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. You're playing in the Masters. So best of luck at Augusta and the rest of this year. Jake Knapp.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
That's it for today. Rate and review the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen, or share this episode with a friend who you think would enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you on Monday.